right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago. We'll be here until 4 o'clock, keeping you informed, keeping you company, and keeping you getting through this. We're here. It's a Wednesday morning. So at 3:30, we will do, of course, Know Your Onion. That's where Tom will quiz two of our listeners. They'll each have a round of Know Your Onion. He'll read some news headlines, and you have to decide whether they're real or they're from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. And then you win. We always play some classic Johnny Carson clip every morning at 2:30. Johnny Carson's show is on Antenna TV every night, and you should watch it. And we're going to go back and listen to some Carnac, The Magnificent, which is my favorite bit that Johnny Carson used to do. So 312-981-7200 is the number if you would like to join us. So interesting story that we were reading about where out of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and it says a bronze chest filled with gold, jewels, and other valuables worth more than $1 million was hidden a decade ago somewhere in the Rocky Mountain wilderness, and it's been found. According to a famed art and equities collector who created the treasure hunt, Forrest Fenn said that told the Santa Fe New Mexican on Sunday that a man who did not want his name released located the chest a few days ago, and the discovery was confirmed by a photograph the man sent him. Now, Forrest Fenn lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where he started an art gallery. He raised a family, he collects artifacts, he writes books, and he made a fortune. He had hidden approximately $1 million of his fortune in gold and gems and old world stuff, bronze chest, which, by the way, the bronze chest alone cost $25K. And the whole shebang said it weighed about 42 pounds, and he buried it. And encouraged people to go on a treasure hunt. Now, one of the people that actually was part of this treasure hunt is on the line with us. Dal Neitzel is his name. He's a filmmaker, and he was part of the treasure hunt. Dal, nice to talk to you, sir.
Nice to speak with you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. What an interesting story. Have you met Forrest?
Oh yeah, Forrest and I are pretty good friends.
Yeah. How would you describe his personality? He seems like an eccentric.
I think eccentric is a really good word for him.
Yeah.
You have to be a little different in order to be willing to take $1 million of your hard-earned money, treasures and jewels, gold, diamonds,
yeah,
and antiquity jewelry, and put it in a chest, hide it, write a poem with 9 clues to where it's at, and tell everybody that whoever finds it can keep it.
This story is so fascinating to me and strange and kind of wonderful. And I find it amazing that this went on for a full decade, Dal?
Yeah, I don't know if you took a look at that poem, but that's what most people have to go on is the poem. And, the first clue in it is begin it where warm waters halt. Well, I mean, where do you want to start?
Yeah.
What are warm waters halt? What is it that we begin at? I mean, it was a puzzle poem, so
yeah.
it took 10 years for somebody to figure it out.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Now, let's go back to the beginning. How did this whole treasure hunt thing begin?
Well, back in 1988, Forrest, who at that time had just gotten out of a gallery, he opened up and started a gallery that was arguably one of the most successful galleries in Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm.
In 1988, he had just closed it. He sold it, and we found out that he had cancer, and he was given 6 months to live.
Mm.
One of his friends came to my house, and Forrest's house was decorated with some of his treasures that he traded for and found in his house. His house looks like a museum. I mean, he has some of the most splendid Western and American Indian artifacts that you've ever laid your eyes on. And his friend came by the house and said, Forrest, what are you going to do with all this stuff? You can't take it with you.
Right.
Forrest said, well, the hell I can't. I'm taking it with me. And so So to prove the point, he decided he was going to fill a treasure chest with goodies from his collection, artifacts, and he was going to hide it somewhere, and people would look for it. He figured he had a special place in mind, and we don't know for how long, but he's had a very special place in mind, and he was going to go to this special place with the chest, and he was going to end his life there because he didn't want to die in a hospital bed with hoses up his nose
right.
and let cancer take him.
Right.
So while he was still able to make the trek out to his special place, he was going to take the chest and sit down under a tree somewhere and take 50 sleeping pills. And the poem that he had ready to put out at that particular moment, the last couple lines of it said, "Take the chest, but leave my bones alone."
Mm.
And that was the start of this. And then, according to Forrest, a horrible thing happened. The cancer went away, and he didn't die. So he decided that he would do the treasure hunt anyway.
Yeah.
And so he rewrote the poem so it didn't have those last couple of lines in it. And then in when he was 79 or 80, that would have been in roughly in 2010.
Yeah.
He took that chest out to his special place, and he left it there. He published a book, and on his website, he put the poem so that people could have access to it. And he said, along with the poem, he said, "You know, I dare you to go find my chest, and if you can, you get to keep it."
Wow. Okay. Listen, Dal, hang on. Dal Neitzel is with us. He is a filmmaker and a treasure hunter and participated in this very unique and kind of strange story that we just heard the whole setup of, and now we'll talk back to Dell and ask him about his experience as part of this. Really fascinating, fun stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio. All right. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here till 4 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. We were talking with Dell Neitzel, who is a filmmaker who also participated in a treasure hunt that was put together by a man named Forrest Fenn, who we just learned about, why it all started and how it started. He basically took $1 million worth of his collection, put it in a treasure chest and buried it, and then asked people to find it. He put a poem out to give clues, and this lasted for 10 years, and someone just found it. Dal, when did you first get involved with the treasure hunt?
I got involved in it as soon as Forrest posted it on his website. I was watching his website because he was selling some of his magnificent pieces from his collection. Nothing I could afford,
right.
But it was nonetheless fun to look at. We're talking about museum quality Indian artifacts and just beautiful things and
yeah.
things you don't often see.
Yeah.
And I was very impressed by that stuff. I would love to, you know, to have been able to have a few of those pieces, but there's no way. But I would look at his website and drool over some of the pictures and try to ignore the incredible prices that he was asking for them. And one day, while I was perusing his site, you know, that poem popped up and the challenge to go find his chest. Well, you know, my goodness, ever since I was 6 years old, I mean, you know, I had a pretend sword and liked to be a pirate. And what kid, you know, today doesn't like to pretend to be Indiana Jones and get involved in some kind of an adventure?
Yeah.
You must have done that as a
kid.
Of course. You must have thought,
yeah,
that's great fun.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and as an adult, this is an opportunity to be that kid again, you know, to have an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And so reading further on, we found out that, you know, he devised this thing. He wrote the poem in such a way and hid the treasure in such a way that the whole thing was designed for kids and families to go look for. You don't have to be Indiana Jones to find his chest. Mm-hmm. He said that over many times. Remember, you know, he would say, I was 79 or 80 when I hit it.
Right.
And he would give us additional little hints, like we knew that he drove somewhere nearby, parked his car, and made two trips back and forth to hide the gold and treasures. He took the goodies one time, and he took the chest the second time. But he went back and forth to his car, from his car to the hiding place, twice in one afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that, you know, it isn't something like a 26-mile hike that you've got to do.
Right.
And we've known since the beginning that he said it's pretty safe for kids. You know, I mean, as safe as anything in the mountains can be. Always take your chances, you know. I mean, you can get hit by lightning or, you know, an earthquake can happen. You know, who knows what's going to happen out there. But it's relatively safe, and he planned it that way. People oftentimes forgot that, but I got involved in it right away, and it took me that winter to come up with a solution from the poem. And then in May, I figured out exactly where it was at. I couldn't wait to get in the van and head out, and that's what I did, knowing the whole way. I mean, it takes me 26 hours to drive from where I live out to Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of time to figure out how I was going to spend $1 million.
Right.
And, you know, I had all kinds of things I wanted to spend that on. Then I spent, I think, 3 or 4 days out there looking where I thought it was going to be. And it, of course, came up empty handed, except for the experience. The experience of looking for it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And although I didn't find his chest, I found lots of little treasures. You know, I'm not from a place where there's a great deal of sage around, but out there I could smell that wonderful mountainy sage all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a beautiful experience, and there were lots of little treasures. You know, that I found and brought home with me. And it was just interesting, and I had a good time. And from then on, I was hooked, because as Forrest and most other searchers have pointed out, it's not about finding the treasure. It's about the chase. It's about searching for the treasure.
Right.
It's about experiencing the mountains and the outdoors. That's what Forrest wanted folks to get out there for. He wanted to get kids away from their video games and off the couch and outdoors, where he grew up and where he had so much fun, and he was trying to create a way to get kids off the couch. And I think he was very successful at it.
That's fantastic. That really is. How many people participated in the treasure hunt? Do you have like a round figure?
That's a really difficult thing, because you never had to pay anything or buy a ticket or,
right,
or sign up or anything else. But I run a blog, and the numbers on the blog are just relatively fantastic. So, for instance, today we've experienced over 6,000 hits. Every hour.
Wow.
Yeah. It hasn't always been that high. Part of that is because people are interested in this story today.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
But even, you know, in the summer, we were typically experiencing 3,000 to 4,000 hits. And in winter, we'd be down around 1,700, 1,200 hits while people were planning and not going out there, but
right,
they were trying to figure out a solution in the winter.
Right.
And my guess, and, you know, talking with Forrest about this, and he's got a website, and looking at the hits on his website and mine and the email that he gets, the email that I get, we feel confident that we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people,
yeah,
who have participated in this chest hunt. And And that doesn't mean that everybody actually put boots on the ground and went out looking. You know, before you can go out looking, you have to figure out the puzzle of the poem.
Right.
And so you can do that part at home, you know. So it starts out, people who just like puzzles just wanted to try and figure out the puzzle of the poem.
Yeah.
And then it was particularly good for disabled people or for older people who can't get out anymore. Or for people, for whatever reason, maybe they just didn't have the money to take a trip to the mountains. There was that lure as well, you know, just trying to figure it out.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe you can con somebody into testing your solution. And, you know, maybe you've got a grandson or something and you can, you know, hand this off to him and he can take a couple of his buddies and have a good week in the mountains.
Yeah.
Looking for grandpa's chest or something, you know.
Yeah.
So it was good for lots of different kinds of people, and it was fun for lots of different kinds of people to get involved in. And I think that's why the numbers were so high.
Yeah. All right. Listen, Dal, hang on. Dal is with us. Dal Nightzell is here. He participated in the treasure hunt. I want to hear the poem. I want to make sure we hear the poem and see if we can figure out some of the other stuff, and then maybe he can break it apart for us. Dal can break it apart for us. Lots more questions about this this treasure hunt that just ended, and it lasted 10 years. We'll talk more after this on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 4. We are going to be talking about some of the weird things that we've sent out into space for some reason. And we'll talk about the Space Force as well and some stupid engineering mistakes that have happened. Classic Carson. We're going to play some Karnak the Magnificent from 1974 and a round of Know Your Onion because it's Wednesday morning. We do it every Wednesday morning at 3:30. Two contestants play a round each with Tom reading headlines. To see if you can tell the difference between a real headline and a headline from The Onion, which is a satirical newspaper. Right now, we're talking with Dal Nightzell, who is a filmmaker who participated in a treasure hunt that lasted 10 years. Dal, I have the poem in front of me, and I'm looking at it. Do you have it in your hands?
I do.
Yeah. Well, why don't you read it? And then, you know, every once in a while, break it down and see what the clues were, if you can.
Okay, well, there's six stanzas in the poem, and each stanza has four lines. And so it begins, as I have gone alone in there, and with my treasures bold, I can keep my secret where, and hint of riches, new and old. Mm. So what does that sound like to you?
I really don't know. Is it important that he mentions that he went alone?
A lot of people do think so because that means he didn't have any help. It also means that no one else, well, we know that no one else knows where it's at. And if he went in there alone, well, that's probably true.
Yeah. So it's important that he said that. Then that's a clue.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like it's kind of like an introduction to the poem. It seems like it's kind of setting the whole idea of where this treasure chest might be up. But there's another possible explanation. Now, we still don't know how to interpret this poem, even though it's been found. The only person in 10 years who has interpreted correctly is one guy who lives in the East who found it last week.
Yeah.
And nobody's talked to this guy yet. He's trying to stay off the radar.
Right.
And so we don't know what his solution was. So for 10 years, people have been trying to come up with, you know, solutions, and some of them have been pretty far out and wacky, and some of them are pretty darn smart.
Mm-hmm.
But here's an idea. So let me go on with the poem.
Okay.
So the next thing in the line is the second stanza, and the first line we know is the first clue, and we know that because Forrest told us.
Okay.
So this is the first of nine clues. Begin it where warm waters halt. And take it in the canyon down. not far, but too far to walk, put in below the home of Brown.
Wow. Okay.
Then he goes on, from there, it's no place for the meek. The end is ever drawing nigh. There'll be no paddle up your creek, just heavy loads and water high. If you've been wise and found the blaze, look quickly down, your quest to cease, but tarry scant with marveled gaze, and take the chest and go in peace. So why is it that I must go and leave my trove for all to seek? The answers I already know. I've done it tired, and now I'm weak. So hear me all and listen good. Your effort will be worth the cold if you're brave, and in the wood I give you title to the gold.
You know, no wonder.
That's the whole poem.
No wonder it took 10 years to figure this out.
Yeah, it's not. You're not going to sit down in 5 minutes and have this all unplumbed.
Oh, absolutely not.
This is a puzzle. Yeah, this is a puzzle. And so it's a challenge. And so, you know, I can't tell you. I've worked with police detectives, folks who've been searchers,
yeah,
who have tried to figure this out, puzzle masters, folks who have won award after award after award for their puzzle on puzzling abilities, and we've worked with private investigators, with folks who are used to trying to figure out what things mean,
yeah,
and you know, none of them in 10 years could ever apparently figure this out. I mean, many people thought they had it figured out. Lots of people, me included at one point, I thought I had it figured out.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, when you sit down, you come up and you begin matching these, you try to figure out what the nine clues are, you begin trying to match them to someplace in the Rocky Mountains, and a lot of people thought they had done it, and then they got out there, and of course there was no treasure chest where they ended up, and had to start over again.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
So what? Let me ask you a question. What do you think "begin it where warm waters halt" means?
My guess is first clue. My guess is that it's like the end of a stream. It's located like near the end of a water, you know, based like a river or something like that.
Yeah. Where do rivers end? I don't. Yeah. They end at the ocean, don't they, or a lake or something?
Mm-hmm. I don't know where. Do you know what "begin where warm waters halt" means?
No, I don't. Nobody knows anything except the guy that actually found it.
The guy that actually found it.
And Forrest. Yeah. They're the only two people that know. And that was always the problem. Is you never. There was no way to verify. Anywhere along here, there's never been a way to verify whether you were right or wrong. You couldn't say, well, I got the first one right, and now I got to figure out the second one.
Right.
That isn't true. We never knew if any of our solutions or any part of our solutions were ever correct. So we were always, all we knew was that where we ended up, where we thought the poem ended and took us, was not where the chest was.
Yeah. Wow. So,
there were lots of hoaxers, you know, who would say, "Hey, I found the chest, but I'm not going to tell you where I found it." You know, it's the internet, right?
Of course,
so
sure.
You've always got folks like that who are trying to screw up everybody else's fun.
Yeah.
But nobody had ever found it. Nobody really found it, and we know that. You know, we knew it all along because Forrest said he would know if anybody found the chest, and he would let us know.
Yeah.
And several times he, over that 10-year period, when folks began to believe that some hoaxer was for real, Forrest would come in and say, you know, no, this guy didn't find it. Don't believe it. Just keep looking.
Mm-hmm. Now, Forrest is 89 years old now. What did he do for a living? And I know he wrote a book called The Thrill of the Chase. What did he do for a living to amass the fortune that he had?
Well, Forrest was a, this isn't the way he amassed his fortune, but when he was 20, he joined the Air Force. This was 1950. He joined the Air Force and he enlisted. He got to be a sergeant, and he decided at one point that his boss was not somebody he liked working with, and so he went to his CO and he said, you know, hey, what can I do to get out of here?
Yeah.
And the guy gave him a couple of choices, and one of the choices was he could try out for pilot school.
Okay.
So yeah, so Forrest said, okay, I'll try that. And as it turned out, he was very skilled. He was just the kind of guy they were looking for.
Okay.
And so they sent him to pilot school. They commissioned him, and he was a fighter pilot. He was a fighter pilot in Vietnam. He got shot down twice.
Jeez.
And he retired in 1970.
Okay.
And when he retired, he took his watch off and threw it in a field and said he was never going to, you know, be worried about the clock again.
Mm.
And he didn't know exactly what he was going to do, but he decided that whatever it was, he wanted to make sure that his best client wasn't going to give him $29.15 every time he bought something.
Mm.
He ended up opening up a gallery in New Mexico. He liked Santa Fe because in Santa Fe he could wear hush puppies and blue jeans all the time.
Okay.
So in 1972, I think, he and his wife Peggy, and he had two young girls at the time, they moved to Santa Fe. They bought an old foundry there. Forrest had a background in foundry, but he didn't really want to run a foundry. They turned it into an art gallery. It's a beautiful place. He and Peggy did it themselves. They remodeled the place, and he didn't have much money. I mean, you know, he was a retired. I think he said he was making something like $110 a month was his retirement or something.
Yeah.
And he still gets that, by the way.
Oh, he does.
and he had saved up $10,000. He and Peggy had saved up $10,000, and that was everything they had. And with it, they bought this building, and they started to convert it into a gallery downstairs, and upstairs were their living quarters. It turned out to be a beautiful place with lots of really personal touches
mm-hmm.
in downtown Santa Fe. And it also turned out to be a magnificent gallery. Forrest was interested always in Western art, and so he was selling very high-priced Western art. And he had a guest house on his property next to the gallery. And so lots of notable people would come to his gallery, stay at his guest house, explore Santa Fe, and, of course, in the meantime, buy a couple of paintings for,
sure.
you know, $35,000, $40,000, $50,000, $120,000, depending upon which ones he had up for sale.
Yeah.
And he became quite wealthy. You know, I mean, he did very well. I have no idea how much Forrest is worth or what his collection is worth, but they did very, very well. And he did a couple of really smart things, too. How long before... Can I tell a story here?
Please,
yeah,
please.
So, one of the things they did... I can't remember. There was a fellow who used to do fake paintings.
Okay.
He used to say, boy, there are plenty of my paintings hanging up in museums all over the world. You know,
yeah.
The museums bought into them. They thought they were real.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about Picassos and things like that
mm-hmm.
were worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, the guy eventually died, and he owed a bunch of money, and instead of paying in cash, he had given... the people who had supported him paintings. Forrest went in and bought these paintings.
Then these are forgeries, correct?
These are forgeries.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right.
Right.
And Forrest bought them and brought them back to the U.S. and put them up in his gallery. And at first he didn't say anything. And people would come into his gallery and say, oh, that's a gorgeous painting. That's just lovely. A Picasso or whatever it was signed to be. And Forrest would come up and he would say, well, you know, that's that's not really a Picasso. I think the guy's name was Dehori.
Okay.
That's actually painted by a forger by the name of Dehori.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, people would take a step back and say, well, that's horrible. And they would have no more interest in the painting. And Forrest would say, well, what's changed about that painting? It was beautiful 30 seconds ago. And now, I mean, why, just because someone else painted it, is it no longer a beautiful painting?
Yeah.
So people would buy these from him. As Dehori's, he would make them sign an agreement that they understood that it was a Dehori and not a Picasso or whatever. And now he turned Dehori into a... I mean, everybody wanted to have a Dehori in their house. He was smart like that, very smart.
Yeah.
And he is still, obviously,
yeah,
very smart like that. He was clever, and he didn't do things in the usual way. He was very imaginative, very creative in his business, and that's how he became quite wealthy.
There you go. All right. Dale, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, Dale Neitzel is with us, and we're talking about this sort of amazing story about Forrest Fenn. What a character. Wow. Amazing. And this 10-year-long treasure hunt just ended, and we're talking with Dale, who covered the whole thing on his website, and he had a blog. And we'll talk about that and some of the experiences that he had actually looking for the treasure. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio on WGN.
This thing called love.
Yeah. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio. It's a Wednesday morning. We'll play a round of Know Your Onion coming up at 3:30. At 2:30, we go always play some Carson Classics. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV. We're going to hear from Carnac the Magnificent, and we're also going to talk about some space stuff, weird things that were sent out to space. We'll talk a little bit about the Space Force. That's all coming up. It's 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. My guest right now is Dale Neitzel. He's a filmmaker, and he participated in this 10-year-long treasure hunt that was all created by a guy named Forrest Fenn. He buried a treasure somewhere, wrote a poem with clues in it, and tons of people went on a search for this treasure. Someone just found it last week, and it was worth like $1 million. And Dale Neitzel, Dale. So you made 70 trips to find the treasure. So tell me what that was like and your experience, your personal experience doing this. I know you were talking about how people were you were going out and you weren't finding it, but you were enjoying the nature. And so what was the personal experience like for all the times that you went?
That was magnificent. I want to correct something that you said.
Okay.
You mentioned that the treasure was buried, and it, you know, that's typical in American language. We always think about buried treasure. But Forrest never said he buried this treasure. He always said he hid it.
Oh,
he said,
okay,
it might be buried, but it might not be either. And so we never knew whether it was buried or it was just, you know, sitting out in somebody's refrigerator behind the ketchup somewhere.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it was hidden as far as we knew. It turns out that it looks, now that we, based on the couple lines that Forrest has given us so far, now that it's been found, it sounds like it was just laying right out in the open underneath some trees somewhere.
Oh, okay.
So it apparently was not buried. So my experiences were wonderful. You know, the mountains are a fantastic place, and especially in, you know, we knew that he didn't hide it in downtown Denver, or,
right,
we knew that it was out in the wilderness somewhere,
right,
or out in a beautiful place. I mean, it was his special place, and we didn't know. He told us that it was in one of four states, that it was in New Mexico, at least 8.2 miles north of Santa Fe,
mm-hmm,
in Colorado, in Wyoming, or in Montana. We knew it was in there. We knew, and we also knew it was in the Rocky Mountains. So you know, it couldn't be in Denver. Denver's not in the Rocky Mountains.
Right.
It had to be in the mountains somewhere. We also, he wouldn't suggest, he gave us a map in his book about where the treasure chest could be, and he gave us other hints like it's between 5,000 and 10,200 feet. It's not at the top of a mountain. It's not in a tree, but it could be surrounded by trees and things like that that began to help us narrow down the area that it could be in. So, you know, you're spending, if you're looking for the treasure, you're spending a lot of time in some beautiful, gorgeous country.
Mm-hmm.
You're hiking around on trails and looking at waterfalls. And I don't know, if you're a fisherman, you're out there dropping a line in, trying to tease some fish up. You're camping, perhaps. You're just enjoying the outdoors. And that's important because that gets you closer to the Forrest Fenn experience.
Mm-hmm.
Forrest Fenn's family, his father was a principal in Texas. Forrest grew up in Temple, Texas. His father was a principal there. Very soon after the last day of school in summer, their family would pack up the car and drive up to Yellowstone National Park, and they would camp there all summer long.
Wow.
Until just a couple days before Dad had to go back to school in Temple, Texas. So Forrest really grew up right in Yellowstone National Park. I mean, that was his home. And in a short autobiography that he wrote, he says, you know, my heart is in Yellowstone.
Mm.
And so a lot of people felt that that treasure chest might be hidden in or very close to Yellowstone National Park.
Sure.
And I was one of those people. I've believed now, you know, when this all comes out and we know where it is, I'll probably turn out that I was completely wrong. But my belief has been, you know, for most of the time I've been searching, that either in or right around Yellowstone National Park is the place where he hid it. Because as a kid, he just grew up there.
Yeah.
And he hiked and he played and he rode his bike. And after a while, his family built some cabins out there for rental. And his dad was a guide, a fishing guide out there. And at 14, Forrest was a fishing guide. He wasn't even old enough to drive a car.
Right.
He'd have to have the client drive their car. But he would they'd catch fish. Forrest knew how to catch fish. And they'd fry them up for lunch and then go fishing some more. I mean, that's, you know, Forrest was taking adult parties out and guiding them on fishing tours as a mere teenager.
Yeah.
So I mean, he was really an outdoor guy, and he was just loved that part of the country.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to Yellowstone or not, but it's a gorgeous piece of property.
It's beautiful.
Lots of the most amazing scenery you can see, I think, on the planet. I mean, it's magical out there.
Yep.
Especially if you can go when the crowds aren't there. And so there's a lot of potential places. And again, you know, you're trying to match up clues in the poem with places out there.
Yeah.
To try and discover where this would lead you, and hopefully it would lead you right to the chest. And yeah, it never did for me.
Yeah.
You know, for 70 or so times that I went out looking, I came up empty-handed, like I said, except for the opportunity to walk around in this gorgeous place.
Yeah, yeah.
Get off by myself and just enjoy nature.
Yeah. And that was basically his main motivation, right, Dal?
That's absolutely true. I mean, that's what he wanted. He wanted to get kids off the couch and away from their little video machines.
Yeah.
and go out and experience the outdoors. And if you can't do it because you're too little, then he wanted you to go with your mom and dad and make a family outing of it.
Have you talked to Forrest since the treasure has been found?
I have not talked with him, but we've exchanged emails.
And how does he feel about the fact that it's been found?
Well, he's expressed, he has mixed feelings. You know, he always said that he built this treasure hunt to last 1,000 years if the chest wasn't found.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, none of the clues refer to something that isn't going to be there in 100 years or 200 years.
I gotcha. Yeah.
All these clues are something that's permanent on the landscape. We're not talking about a sign or a house or a road. We're talking about permanent landscape geographic features. He said, you know, I have mixed feelings about having it found. He's 90. At 90, you're confronted with the possibility that you're not going to be on the planet much longer.
Yeah, it's true. Yep.
And he's a realist. He understands that. And so I think part of him was relieved that the treasure was found in his lifetime, that he could see it found.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think he also played part of this. I've never heard him say this. This is just my interpretation. I think in some ways it was kind of like his legacy, you know? He hoped that 100 years from now people might still be looking for that Forrest Fenn treasure.
Yeah.
You know, saying his name and conjuring up images of what this old guy must have been like and who... What kind of nutcase would go out and hide $1 million?
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating story, Dal. Really quickly before we let you go, you gonna write a book or something about your experience and about this?
No, I don't think so. No, we'll keep the blog up as an archive for folks. But there are filmmakers out there who have been trying to chase this down.
Yeah.
I think it'll be an interesting story.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Listen, it's been fascinating and fun talking with you, Dal, and you tell great stories, and Forrest sounds like a fascinating gentleman, and it's a great story. As soon as we found it, we were like, we have to get somebody involved in this. So, and Dal, we thank you.
Well, thanks.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.